I wish every one of my colleagues well who's decided they want to do something else. Lord knows, you know, I wouldn't judge them for that. But what I want Democrats out there, if we're talking politics, to know is that some of us are going to stand and fight.
Hi there, it's WAMC News Director Ian Pickus. And on this episode of the WAMC News Podcast, an extended conversation with New York Congressman Sean Patrick Maloney of the 18th District. He's in charge of the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee's midterm strategy. We talk about COVID, President Biden's polls, Ukraine, and much, much more. Let's jump right into it. Congressman Maloney, welcome. And since we last spoke, you yourself had a case of COVID-19. How are you doing?
I'm fine. You know, like a lot of people, I had a breakthrough case. I was sick for about a week, but, you know, pretty mild. Felt real tired and had a cough, but nothing much beyond that. But, you know, unfortunately, it's what we're dealing with. But it still makes a lot of sense to be vaccinated and boosted, because most of the docs told me it could have been much more serious if I didn't have that immunity already. So I was certainly glad to be vaccinated, you know, when I had a breakthrough case. But good news is it looks like we're on the backside of the Omicron surge. Case numbers are much, much better. And hopefully we can, you know, lift these mask mandates and people can start living more normal lives.
Any idea where you got COVID?
No, you know, no. I mean, I you know, it would just be a guess.
So as you just mentioned, you've been advocating in recent days for establishing a clear off-ramp from COVID restrictions. What's your view of how everyday life should look in the next few weeks and months?
Well, first of all, I think because of a lot of responsible decisions by individuals, by policymakers, you know, I give the Biden administration a lot of credit for getting the shots in arms, getting the testing kits out there, all the things that have brought us to a point where we have good vaccines, very good vaccine coverage in New York, where we have good therapeutics, better treatments, where we have widely available and reliable testing. And what we're seeing is that people have much better outcomes. And so while the case numbers went through the roof recently, the ICU admissions and the really serious outcomes, obviously the death rate are what we really are tracking. And that was a much better picture relative to the early part of the pandemic. So long story short, it would appear that we are in a position where, because of you know, the fact that more than 90% of seniors have are fully vaccinated in New York, I think the numbers are 75 among everybody over five. And with the natural immunity out there, I believe we are absolutely in a position to lift the mask mandates. And remember, there's a difference between a mandate and making a good decision on mask wearing. People will still want to wear masks, certainly in certain situations. Certain people who are particularly vulnerable should probably continue to wear masks. But I don't think we need to mandate it, in New York at least, at this point.
What kind of data are you using to come to that conclusion? I ask that because there have been some differing decisions made by governors in the Northeast, especially when it comes to masks in schools. What makes you say now's the right time?
Well, just look at the hospitalizations, the ICU admissions, and the death rate, I think are the most relevant metrics about whether we can, through our existing healthcare system, with the needed support we have to provide, whether we can manage a surge in cases, whether the hospitalizations stay lower than they were and much less serious in terms of the patient condition and outcomes. And again, if you aren't seeing the ICU admissions and you aren't seeing the death rate that we saw in the early part of the pandemic, and we're talking about significantly improved data on that, then I think most of us understand that we can go about our daily lives understanding that some of us should be wearing masks, particularly if you were immune compromised, if you're obese, if you're elderly, if you're not vaccinated, it's the most serious thing. And the rest of us are unlikely to get a breakthrough case. And if we do, we'll have a good outcome. And that to me really argues for looking at the other costs associated with having kids in masks in schools, having people in masks in their daily lives, of separating people and isolating them. I mean, there are real costs to these measures, as important as they've been over the last 2 years, and we need to move beyond it at the earliest possible opportunity. I think it's absolutely justified by the data here in New York and the responsible thing to do. And I applaud the governor for doing it.
You know, the CDC has not advocated for taking masks down yet. Are you communicating your vision to the federal government and to the White House for how you think, you know, things should be going in terms of COVID?
Yeah, you bet. But don't miss the distinction between what the CDC is saying and what I just said. What the CDC is saying is that masks make sense. That is a different thing than saying mandates are necessary, where your case rates and your hospitalizations and your death rates have dropped precipitously, and the immunity in the population through vaccination and resolving the virus is really at herd immunity. So what CDC is saying is not you need a mandate. What CDC is saying is that masks make sense in certain situations. Now, look, they're also dealing with a national picture where in other places they're not as well off as we are now in New York. So what I'm talking about is in New York, you know, mask wearing is great if you want to do it. Go for it. And you should absolutely do it if you're around someone who's vulnerable or you are vulnerable to the virus. But if you're a fully vaccinated, otherwise healthy adult, I don't think a mandate is necessary. And that's the point. There's a difference between whether masks make sense and whether they're mandated.
There have been other costs associated with the pandemic, as you mentioned, including economically. How do you view the state of the economy post-COVID or maybe at the tail end of COVID now in your district and in New York State?
Look, it's good in some ways, and in other ways, it's not. I mean, the fact is that groceries and gas are too damn high, and people feel it every day. So they're not going to take a lot of comfort in the fact that, you know, economic growth and job creation is really robust. So you got to do it all. You got to have strong growth creation, business formation, all the things that are actually good right now. That's a great backdrop. But we got to get the supply chain issues worked out. We got to get the prices of groceries and gas down because it's really hurting people. And until we do that, we're not done. And so I think we've made a lot of progress from the depths of the pandemic, and we got a lot of good things in the pipeline. But it's not where it should be.
Who's to blame for that? I asked that question because as we speak, a new Quinnipiac poll just came out with some, you know, bad numbers for President Biden in terms of his job approval among Americans. Do you see a connection between the inflation issue and, you know, President Biden's fortunes?
Well, obviously when you're the president, people are going to hold you accountable for everything, whether it's fair or not. I think most people out there understand that inflation right now is a function of what happened with the pandemic. You know, you blew up the world economy and the supply chains, and then you restarted them kind of all at once. And so I think it makes sense to folks that when you look around the world, everybody's dealing with this, not just us. And in fact, we're dealing with it better than most of the other major economies in the world. We've got better growth rates and a better economy. But that doesn't mean people feel better about, you know, paying too much for gas or more for groceries. So until you get the price of a gallon of milk and a pound of hamburger and a gallon of gas back to where it should be, yeah, you bet there's going to be some fallout for anybody who's in charge. The question is whether the president's making the right decisions. And when you look at the success in resolving the supply chain crisis, when you look at what they're doing by trying to eliminate the gas tax or reduce it at the federal level, which would help at the pump, when you look at what they're doing with releasing petroleum oil from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, and these are real actions that will have a good impact. And then together with getting containers off of the ships faster and making the port workers go 24 hours a day at our major ports, these are all things the administration has done that will help get us out of this faster. And so I think they're on the right track, but man, we're not where we should be.
I only have about a minute or two for this last topic in this segment, but what's your sense of the situation in Ukraine right now and the state of, you know, U.S.-Russia talks, the potential for a ground war there?
Well, it's a very serious situation. I'm actually headed to the Munich Security Conference tomorrow, and I'll be in Europe for the next few days really focusing on this. I serve on the House Intelligence Committee. I've spent a bunch of time on it already. I think what Americans should know is that it's a very serious situation. The Russians are menacing Ukraine in an unprecedented manner. You're talking about north of 100,000 Russian forces on the border of that country, which poses no threat to Russia. And if there is a war, I think people should understand you're talking about a major ground invasion. You're talking about ballistic missiles, airstrikes, naval bombardments, amphibious landings. This is not some bloodless action. This is going to be a major conflict. You're going to have huge civilian casualties. and it'll be an absolute disaster for the people who live there and for security in Europe and for the economy of the world in many ways. And so it's absolutely essential that we prevent and deter what the Russians are doing. I think this week has brought a glimmer of hope that the president's policies of standing strong here are working. I mean, give President Biden some credit. He has stood up to President Putin, showed a real steel spine on this, and it looks like the Russian dictator may be backing off, but we don't know yet. And if he chooses to invade, it's going to be absolutely horrific, and we'll need to be in it for the long haul.
Congressman Maloney, President Biden will be naming a new Supreme Court nominee and has pledged that it will be a black woman. Wondering if you have any thoughts on the nomination or the process.
Well, listen, I think that when you look at the candidates he's focusing on, any one of them would be an outstanding choice. It's exciting that he's going to make a little history with that appointment. I think it's time. You know, my 21-year-old daughter, who's African-American and studying, pre-law criminal justice, I think it's exciting that she'll be able to look at the Supreme Court and see someone who looks like her. And of course, not just that she be able to do that, but that millions of Americans understand that the Supreme Court reflects all of us and makes decisions that impact all of us. And it should absolutely be inclusive of all the diversity in our country. It's never been. And so I think it's a good thing the president's doing. But first and foremost, he's also got outstanding jurists. I mean, the brightest legal minds of their generation that he's choosing from. So I'm excited for his. I'm excited to see who he picks.
What do you think of the idea favored by some Democrats to expand the size of the Supreme Court from the current 9 members?
Yeah, it's not going to happen. I mean, I understand why people want it to, but I try to focus on things that are actually going to happen. I don't think that's in the cards.
There were sort of two big wings of President Biden's domestic agenda. Number one was the infrastructure package, which is now law. The other is the Build Back Better agenda, which is still bottled up. What kind of effect is the infrastructure now law having on your district in particular?
This is the biggest deal in a long time, and I'm so excited about it. I mean, I've been doing events around to try to get the word out. I mean, people need to understand this is about investing in our own country again, thank God, and in the biggest way since, you know, we built the interstate highway system back in the 50s. I mean, we're talking about big things and things that wouldn't occur to you. So obviously roads and bridges back to state of good repair, particularly all these crappy little county bridges we drive over every day. They call those off-system bridges. I wrote the legislation in the House that will put about $12 billion just into those bridges so we get them all back to the state of good repair. We're talking about good investments in our commuter rail here in the Northeast, in Amtrak, talking about money to local airports, talking about clean drinking water. I mean, my goodness, this legislation will allow us to get every lead pipe out of every drinking water system in America. It would have taken literally hundreds of years at the current rate to do that. We're going to do that in this legislation. That is, as you point out, law now, not a proposal. It's happening. And by the way, all of that and more will create millions of good, well-paying jobs here in the United States that you can support a family on, that you can get with a high school education. I mean, this is a big win for America and will create a generation or more of economic wealth. So it's exactly the kind of thing we ought to be investing in, and it's bipartisan. And I think everybody should give this president some credit. A bunch of people have been talking about this for years. He got it done, and it's going to be a big win for the Hudson Valley and for our country.
Now, on the other side, Build Back Better has not seen the same success. What's your sense of the state of that bill? Is that agenda still alive with Senator Manchin saying he's a no?
Yeah, it's very much alive. But the question is how do you get it done and what you can get done. I'm a pretty practical guy. I don't want to, you know, tread water forever here. We should figure out what he'll support and pass it. Now, you're talking about what's called a reconciliation bill, right? So you got to do as much as you can in that vehicle because you can only do it once. People will know with 51 votes. But, you know, look at what we're talking about. I mean, for people out there who wonder what the heck are we talking about, and whether they support this or not. I mean, what we're talking about is every 3- and 4-year-old in America being able to go to preschool, not daycare, school, make a huge difference. We're talking about capping people's child care costs at 7% of a middle class family's income. Most working middle class people are paying twice that right now for child care. We're talking about the child tax credit, which has affected 128,000 people just in my district, taken half the kids in poverty and lifted them out of poverty this year. We'd love to get that done. I think Manchin will have some problems with that. But if you think about those things, what a revolution that would be in the way we support and lift up, working families with young children in this country. But, of course, there's a lot more. If you're a senior out there paying too much for prescription drugs, in the legislation, we would finally negotiate the price of prescription drugs in the Medicare program. That's huge. And we would cap at $2,000 a year your out-of-pocket costs for seniors in the Medicare program for prescription drugs. Talk to a woman who's paying $24,000 a year for her MS medication just a couple weeks ago. It would be life-changing for her. And of course, there's so many other things like debt relief for our small farmers here in the Hudson Valley. Every small farmer with a direct loan through USDA would get huge help from this legislation. So what I want to do is I want to focus on how good these proposals are, what a big difference they'd make in people's lives, and bundle enough of them together that we can get it done while still getting the votes we need in the Senate. And that's what's just got to happen, because some of these things are just so important to our families. We just got to keep working at it. And I didn't even mention the huge investments that we would make to tackle the crisis of climate change while creating millions of good jobs in the technologies of the future. That's all in this legislation, too.
Well, a while ago, you said you don't waste time on political impossibilities. I mean, how hopeful are you that all or some of this Build Back Better agenda will get through?
I think there's a very good chance that many of the things I just mentioned can become law in the next few months. It has been frustrating for sure, figuring out what will get those 50 votes in the Senate. And I don't blame people for getting tired of that process, but it's worth it. It's worth it to help those families with child care. It's worth it for those seniors who can't afford their drugs. I mean, it's worth it to save the climate. So we're going to stay at it. And I do think, Senator Manchin in particular has agreed to most, if not all, of those things. By the way, people should know that it's all paid for by asking corporations and the very wealthiest Americans to pay a little more, pay their fair share in taxes. And I think when most people find that out, they actually like it more. And Manchin has supported that. So there are big parts of what I just mentioned that the senator supports. He had at one point agreed to most of it in a deal that was, a little smaller than what some of us were pushing, but that would be worth doing. We just got to keep working at it.
I have a minute or two to ask you about the COMPETES Act, which the House approved. You've been promoting it in the Hudson Valley a bit. What does it do?
Well, I tell you what, I mean, together with the rescue plan and the infrastructure bill, the COMPETES Act is going to become law. It will represent the third major historic piece of legislation. What it's going to do is it's going to bring manufacturing jobs back to the United States, bring our jobs back. How? We're going to invest $50 billion in making sure that microprocessors, semiconductors are made in the United States. That's huge for our economy and our national security. Talking about billions more to make sure that solar panels get manufactured in the United States. These are advanced technologies, good jobs, good wages. We need to bring those manufacturing jobs back to America. People have been talking about it for years. This will do it. It's $40 billion to untangle our supply chains, and most importantly, untangle them by bringing the manufacturing back to the United States in the critical areas that we saw exposed during the pandemic, but others that relate to our future national security. So those are the core pieces of it. I was just out at IBM talking about it because it's a big win for the technology corridor in the Hudson Valley that runs from here up to Albany, and we can really benefit from this. So I hope people check it out. It's called the COMPETES Act in the House. The Senate calls it USICA, USICA, I think. But they're about
a little more confusing.
In a conference committee. Yeah, they're about to get put together in a conference committee, and we should have a law signed by the president in the next couple of months.
Just in a second or two, Republicans carped that the COMPETES Act weakens the U.S. compared to China. What's your response to that?
Yeah, look, the 18 Republicans voted for it in the Senate. So, what you're seeing in the House, I'm sorry to say, is that the truth is there is a lot of bipartisan support for this. It went through a bunch of committees. 80% of it is done on a bipartisan basis. And I'm sorry to tell you that Kevin McCarthy and the House Republicans decided they didn't want to give big win to the president. They know we can pass it without their votes in the House. And so they're all going to vote no. But it's just politics. Look at the 18 Republican senators supporting it in the Senate. Look at the provisions on this. I mean, this is the most important legislation we're going to pass to stand up to China, to bring our jobs back, to build things in the United States again, and they know it's a good bill. They just don't want to give the president a win.
Congressman Maloney, as we speak, the New York Democrats are gathering for their convention. Governor Hochul is trying to run for a full term. Fair to say you're a full-throated supporter of hers?
Yeah, look, I think she's done a great job. I think the governor stepped into a difficult situation, and she's doing a great job.
And do you think that Tom Suozzi, you know, running against her, your fellow congressman from New York, is he making a mistake in that primary?
You know, look, this is for the voters to decide. I mean, Tom's going to, you know, go out there and compete. He believes he's got a vision for New York. He's a friend, and he's a very talented guy. You know, I don't think it's in the cards for him this time, but hey, it's a free country, and he's certainly able to put it before the voters, and we'll let them make up their minds.
You weighed in on the new redistricting maps that the governor signed not long ago, which redraws the House maps as required by the census every 10 years. What do you think of the contours of your new district going forward?
Well, you know, my district remains highly competitive. That's good for the voters. I think of the 22 districts Democrats could win under those new maps in New York, mine would be the toughest one for a Democrat. So, look, I've always been in a competitive seat, and that means I got to earn it 2 years at a time. Go to the voters, tell them what I'm doing. You know how I'm working for veterans, how I'm working to bring jobs back to the U.S. to fight the pandemic. You know how we're gonna get the economy going. Get clean drinking water. All the things that are priorities for me, and it's up to them. So I think it's a good map. I think it's about as fair as we've had a map in New York in a long time, because we've been dealing with the Republican gerrymander for decades, and I think they did a good job.
Now, for their part, the Republicans say this was a partisan gerrymander by Democrats. The Democrats who run the state legislature ended up drawing the lines themselves because the bipartisan commission that was impaneled to draw the maps couldn't come to an agreement together, and Republicans are already challenging it in court. What do you say to that criticism?
Well, look, they have every right to challenge it in court. I think they're going to fail. The fact is the bipartisan commission had the responsibility of coming up with a consensus map, and it failed to do so, not once, but twice. And in that situation, the Constitution requires the Assembly to pass the maps, right? We have to have maps. I mean, the dates are coming up quick to file for office, to get signatures, and to run a campaign. So the legislature was acting responsibly, and they are the elected representatives of the people. So if there's something constitutionally wrong with the map, then sure, you know, we'll see what the courts say. But I don't see it. The fact is that what the Constitution requires, I think, is very much reflected in what the legislature did. And I think it'll be a good map.
Well, you're in charge of the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee's midterm election strategy, which is a big and hard job. So what's your plan to hold on to the House, which would really buck historic midterm trends?
Well, we're going to buck history by making history, right? I mean, you do good things and you tell people about it. You don't got to get real complicated. And I think if you look at saving every small business in America with a rescue plan, helping our cops and our firefighters stay on the job with support to our local communities, look at the help we gave to schools that were really in the crosshairs of the pandemic and yet have been able to kind of chug along, and hopefully we'll be totally back to normal soon. Those things were all up in the air, and the rescue plan got it done. Look at the infrastructure plan. We're talking about, you know, huge investments in our own country, finally, thank goodness, and millions of jobs for American workers, building better roads and bridges and broadband systems and drinking water systems and airports, all the things we need. And, of course, the Competes Act, which we spent some time talking about, which will bring manufacturing jobs back to the United States, set us up for the challenge with China, invest in semiconductors and microprocessors, the kind of industries we have here in the Hudson Valley and in New York. That's a heck of a record for just 13 months. And then there's some things locally that I'm very proud of. You know, I was able to, you know, ban, you know, oil barges, anchorages in the Hudson River. And so I think in a tough district, you want to be able to go to your voters, whether it's my district or somewhere else, and say, look at what I've done. And that's what I'm telling the Democrats running in tough districts. You know, do good things and tell people about it.
We've also seen a good number of House Democrats announce upcoming retirements, including Kathleen Rice from Long Island this week. Is that a bad omen for your efforts, though?
Well, let me be clear. There's all kinds of reasons why people, you know, decide to serve or not. You know, it's a redistricting year, which always sees higher retirements. If you go back and look, it's always when people decide it's time to move on. And I wish every one of my colleagues well who's decided they want to do something else. Lord knows, you know, I wouldn't judge them for that. But what I want Democrats out there, if we're talking politics, to know is that some of us are going to stand and fight. Some of us are committed to this. We've got great recruits coming online. We are coming out of redistricting with a map we can win on. We have outraised our Republican counterparts at the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee compared to the Republican National Campaign Committee. We have more cash on hand at the committee level and at the candidate level. We are focused on the fundamentals. And most importantly, all of our political preparation is because we want to maintain the capacity to get good things done, to keep working on our infrastructure and clean drinking water, creating jobs, bringing jobs back to America, doing the kinds of things we've done to get through the pandemic and to make sure we never have to deal with this again. You know, there's real work here. We want to keep doing it. And that's the point. The point is to be able to keep the capacity so that this president can be successful, so our country can be successful. And I think we're in pretty good shape. We got a challenge. I understand that. But we're going to stand and fight.
You know, in that Quinnipiac poll I mentioned, the president's approval rating was down to 35%. That's a headwind if you're trying to run on the same party, isn't it?
Yeah, of course it is. And it's got to get better. You won't hear me, you know, trying to slap, you know, lipstick on that. I think the fact is that, you know, he's dealing with a lot. He got dealt a rough hand. But I think if you look at our economy, the underlying strength is really impressive. We've got to get inflation down, particularly gas and groceries. And we've got to make sure we keep the economic growth going. And we've got to get this pandemic in the rearview mirror. We've got to get people out of masks. We've got to let parents feel in control of their kids' schools again. And all the things that are bothering people, that needs to get better. And it's totally normal that people would look at the guy in charge and say, we want it better sooner. Why aren't you doing it? But I think most fair-minded people understand that this is a totally unprecedented situation, that the pandemic is what's causing inflation, and we're working fast to bring it down, that we do have good economic growth, that the pandemic, I believe, is coming to an end finally, and I think there's real evidence of that, and that means people won't be having to wear masks, and their kids will be able to go to school as normal, and they can, you know, get back to their normal lives. And I think in that context, you'll see the president do better, as he should, as we get into the summer and fall.
Lastly, talk to me about turnout efforts. You know, in 2020, I think it's fair to say Democrats loathed Donald Trump and they came out to vote for Biden. But you don't have Trump on the ticket this time.
No, that's right. Although, you know, the fact is that I'm sorry to tell you that the Republicans in the House of Representatives seem to have just decided they'll do anything Trump wants. And they've just consistently not shown the courage to do what's right for our country. I mean, look no further than trying to paper over the violent attack on the Capitol, voting against the January 6th commission, which is getting the truth out, and we need the truth. I mean, look at these efforts to pass laws around the country, and this is real. The Republican legislature is passing laws to allow Republican officials to overturn the results of elections if they don't like the result. That's the big lie that Donald Trump, you know, pioneered and spread with deadly results last year. And so the problem is not Trump. The problem is that the Republicans don't have the courage to stand up to him, and they'll do anything for power right now. And they think to do that, they just need to do whatever he wants. Some of us want to do what's right for all of you. Some of us think we can build a better country, that we can get you better schools and a better economy, good jobs, better wages, better health care, clean drinking water, support our veterans. Build the industries of the future right here in America with good manufacturing jobs again, take on China and win. I mean, we got a vision for the country. What you got in the Republican Party, especially in the House of Representatives in Washington right now, unfortunately, is a bunch of people doing whatever Donald Trump wants and whatever they think will get them back to power. And I just think you deserve better.
All right, that does it for this episode of the WAMC News Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time, I'm Ian Pickus.